From Texas Motor Speedway, this is No Limits Nation. Here's your host, the voice of Texas Motor Speedway, Rich Phillips.
Wow, it is a great week in the racing world, and I'm glad you're here with us, downloading and listening to No Limits Nation every week, every Tuesday and Thursday. We have new shows available wherever you get your podcast, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, wherever. Just subscribe. That way, every Tuesday when the race recap show goes up, you'll have it downloaded. Every Thursday when the race preview show goes up, you'll have it downloaded. This Thursday, lots of previewing to do, because this weekend is the biggest day of racing in America with the Indy 500 Sunday, beginning at 10 a.m. Central Time on NBC. Green flag should be around 11 o'clock. And then the Monster Energy NASCAR Cup Series running the Coca-Cola 600 beginning at 5 o'clock Sunday evening on Fox. It is the biggest day of racing in the U.S. On the Thursday show, by the way, we'll talk to one of the front row starters of the Indy 500, Ed Carpenter, as he makes a visit to the Dallas-Fort Worth area this week ahead of the Indy 500 and ahead of the DXC Technology 600, which is about 2.5 weeks away right now on Saturday night, June 8th. Tickets available at TexasMotorSpeedway.com or by calling 817-215-8500. But we still had a good weekend of racing last week. We had lots of fireworks last week. Coming up here in this segment, our race recap of the All-Star Race, we got a who's pissed at who and who should be. And I'll go over the Indy 500 qualifying from last weekend and explain to you how color cost Fernando Alonso a spot in the Indy 500. It's unbelievable. Well, let's start with a recap of the All-Star Race from last Saturday night. Man, it was a great night of racing at Charlotte. And Dustin Long wrote a piece about this on NBCSports.com, a guy we have on the show from time to time. And it's something I've said for a long time, and he showed that it really showed Saturday night. Sometimes shorter racing is better than longer racing. We're going to see quite the dichotomy over these 2 weeks at Charlotte. The All-Star Race the other night, a much shorter race. The Coca-Cola 600, the longest race they run, coming up this Sunday night. It all started, the crazy action started actually with the Open on Saturday early evening, which was three-segment race, 20, 20, and 10 laps with guys that are not qualified for the All-Star Race trying to race their way in. The Stage 1, Stage 2, and Stage 3 winners all secure spots in the All-Star Race. Daniel Hemric had said all along he was going to do it. He was going to win a stage and get the All-Star Race. Looked like he was going to do it. He led the first 15 laps. And then BJ McLeod blows up, and a caution comes out. Guys go in for tires. A few guys stay out. Kyle Larson among them. He takes the lead. Bubba Wallace among them. He's wearing out Larson on the inside. Gives Larson a tire rub going into turn one on the last lap. These two were side by side down the backstretch. Wallace finally able to clear Larson on the exit of four and take the lead. But he had dove in so fast to the turn that he had to slow up on the exit, and it allows William Byron to duck down inside of him, and he goes through the artificial grass. It's a pass in the artificial grass for the win at Charlotte in Stage 1 of the Open. And then Alex Bowman leads the most of the second stage until another caution, a wreck between Daniel Hemric and Ryan Preece, and it ends Hemric's night right there. These guys were beating and banging in turns one and two. Hemric then chops in front of Preece on the exit of four, and Preece didn't let up, gets him loose, and then just punts him after that. So Daniel Suarez leads the first lap on the restart. They had a restart with two to go again in Stage 2 of the Open, but Bubba Wallace passes him going into turn one and two, and then another crazy side-by-side. Looks like it's going to ensue off turn four, but Wallace doesn't let it happen because he blocks, this time coming off turn four, and sends Suarez sliding through the artificial grass in the infield, and Bubba Wallace gets the stage win to lock him in to the All-Star Race. Third stage was a lot more uneventful. Kyle Larson leads the last four or five laps. He goes on to win that, and he is into the All-Star Race. And then Larson becomes only the second driver ever to win the Open and the All-Star Race in the same night. Generally, it's guys already in, because you also have to start at the back when you win your way in. Larson gets a big shove late with 13 to go from Kevin Harvick to take the lead, and he rolls on to the win, and it's the first time that he gets a win in a NASCAR event, at least on the Cup side, since September of 2017 at Richmond.
Gosh, after the year we've had, I would have not guessed that we would get our first win at the All-Star race. But I think the way that the format is, it and how crazy the race is, it kind of helps out us. And we always seem to run good this weekend. So it just feels like a big relief to finally get a win. It's been a long time since I've been to Victory Lane in a stock car.
He's been running a lot better, top 10 in his last 2 points paying starts, but that came after a string of 3 out of 4 races of which he had wrecked. By winning the All-Star race, big payday, $1 million for him, but he's looking for more than the cash.
$1 million is cool, but just winning is more cool than $1 million to me. And I think, you know, maybe we're just in, us drivers or NASCAR drivers are in a good place in our life. You know, it pays well, so whatever. But just winning a big race, you know, a prestigious event, means more to me than the money. You know, I'm all about trophies and big wins.
Yeah, $1 million, whatever. Just give me a trophy that cost you $10 to get made. That's what he wants right there. Now, that's great. I think this could be the springboard Larson needs. We've really been surprised that he's gone a year and a half without winning. I've had several guests of the show we've talked about. It's been the most surprising, one of the most surprising things we have seen in the first third of the Cup Series season. I think this may be the one that sets him off. Now, he still hasn't won his way into the playoffs because this win here does not lock you to the playoffs, but that could be around the corner for Kyle Larson. Kevin Harvick winds up finishing second. Might have been lucky to do this. He won the second stage, but his pit crew lost him 6 spots, and that wasn't their only pit road issue. They then had a loose wheel, and he was fortunate he didn't lose a lap because he caught a break when Eric Jones and Austin Dillon hit the wall to bring out a caution. Harvick had great speed. He led a race high 33 laps. He was very critical of his pit crew after the race, saying they just were not prepared to make a stop on Saturday night. I bet they're prepared on Sunday, and Harvick has got to be one of the favorites, I think, in the Coca-Cola 600. Kyle Busch, third in the All-Star race. He won the first stage but got caught in traffic after that, and he nearly wrecked when Dillon came down in front of him entering Turn 3, and that touched off the Austin Dillon-Eric Jones wreck. Joey Logano led 19 laps. He was fourth. Bubba Wallace, great showing for these guys, winning the second stage of the Open, nearly winning the first stage of the Open. Just thrilled to be in the All-Star race. This car showed a lot of speed, and he finished fifth, and I think Bubba really needed that. Eric Almirola, sixth. Austin Dillon, seventh. Alex Bowman making his way into the All-Star race on the fan vote. He was eighth, led 23 laps in the Open, but couldn't really get out of traffic most of the All-Star race. His teammate William Byron, who again won his way in with the Stage 1 win in the Open, he was ninth. Martin Truex Jr. was 10th. Probably could have been better if he didn't have one of the worst-looking paint jobs out there. I hate that paint scheme he has. I hope they're not running that in the Coke 600 this weekend. Truex, by the way, was in the midst of a ridiculous 4-wide that went down the front stretch at one point, along with Denny Hamlin, Jimmy Johnson, and Alex Bowman. He got a little damage in that. Hamlin probably did, too. Brad Keselowski was 11th. And then 12th and 13th, quite the interesting pairing of Clint Bowyer and Ryan Newman. And not sure what happened, but it's time for an old segment I used to do on my radio show. Who's pissed at who and who should be? Never have seen any video evidence of what happened to start this incident between these two. Newman said that Bowyer chopped him down in front of him early in the race. And if it was early in the race, I guarantee you an hour and a half later when the race ended, Bowyer had no idea about it. He had already long forgotten about it because his mind is going everywhere at all times. But on the cool-down lap, what we did see was that Newman turned Bowyer right into the Turn 4 wall and wrecked him. After that, Bowyer came running, racing across pit road to Newman's car, and then went flying with both fists in the window while Newman was still in the car. Newman had his helmet off. Bowyer did not, which has drawn a little bit of ire. Bowyer then talking to FS1, the broadcast crew, gives his side of the incident.
Right, I don't know what the hell his beef was. I thought he was a lap down. You know, our day was over. We lost track position there, got sideways, crossed up, and basically, you know, just buying time there and seeing if something's going to happen at the end. They got 4 wide off of 4. Hell, I thought he was a lap down. I checked up, and he runned him in the left rear, and that's the last I saw of him. And then after the race, he comes and runs into my back and turns me all around, and I pull up next to him, and he dumps me into 4. Where I come from, you get poked in the nose for that. That's what he got.
I do like that statement from him. Obviously, Newman wasn't a lap down. They finished 12th and 13th, respectively. Newman had gone on a long slide through the infield grass early in the race, but had no real damage. That infield grass is something we need to discuss, too. So, to be fair, Fox did go talk to Ryan Newman to get his side of the story.
14 shot me on the front straightaway earlier in the race. I just about turned him around. If I went into brakes, I would have turned him around. And then after the race, I just went up and tapped him in the back, let him know I didn't appreciate the way he raced me. And then he body slammed me. Then I hit him back a little bit on the back straightaway, and then he just cut across my nose in turn three. So doesn't take much of a man to try to fight somebody with a helmet on. I think he should be embarrassed of himself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, he probably should have done it. He did. Boyer did what I've been critical for years of Jimmy Spencer doing to my guy Kurt Busch years ago when Spencer approached and took a punch at Kurt while Kurt was still belted into his car. Clint did the same thing. Newman, I think, was still belted into the car. He did obviously have his helmet off because when that interview you just heard the clip from there aired, he had a nice puffy area under his left eye. And it was hilarious on social media afterwards because it was Rock'em Sock'em Robots is what Clint Boyer looked like, the way he was punching in the window of Ryan Newman's car. You know, the results here of who's pissed at who and who should be, it's hard to say. You know, I really can't tell because we just never saw any video of what started this incident. There's no doubt they were both pissed at each other, but it was only Clint Boyer who got any punches in. Some people believe he did it while he was belted in and with his helmet on because he knew that was the best shot he had at Newman. Nobody really wants to tangle with Newman if they can avoid it. We'll see if this carries over to Sunday in the Coke 600. It probably won't for Boyer because he's forgotten about it by now because he is the king of ADD. But it definitely was fun to watch and great to see passion like that between drivers in an exhibition race, no less. But Clint, take your helmet off next time, at least. At least take your helmet off. Rounding out the finishing order there in the All-Star race, Chase Elliott was 14th, led a couple of laps in the race. Jimmy Johnson, 15th. Ryan Blaney, 16th. Kurt Busch, some crash damage. He retires in 17th. Denny Hamlin, 18th. And Eric Jones, 19th in the All-Star race. One of the more entertaining All-Star races we've seen in quite some time. Man, that All-Star Open, too, the last few years has been really exciting. And it certainly was Saturday night. Next up, the Cup Series run Sunday, their longest race of the year. The Coca-Cola 600, 5 o'clock Central Time. It is on Fox. Now we need to shift to the open wheel cars. We had Indy 500 qualifying on Saturday and Sunday. And I'm going to explain to you how color cost Fernando Alonso from making the Indy 500. First, let's start with Saturday. You got 36 cars entered. Only 33 cars are going to make the race. Pretty interesting day, intriguing day on Saturday, I thought. If you don't have the NBCSN Gold Pass for IndyCar Series, man, it was worth its money on Saturday because they went through the entire day of the qualifying, which was like 6 hours, no commercials at all. It was fantastic coverage to watch. James Hinchcliffe wrecked earlier the day in practice. His team had to scramble to get him back on the track that same day. By the way, why don't these guys have backup speedway cars? Some of these guys like Hinch, that was a road course car they put him in. Fernando Alonso, two-time Formula One world champion. He's had issues from day one with this this setup with McLaren. And you know, it's funny. He had his first test with McLaren a little over a month ago here at Texas Motor Speedway. Because remember, he's only run one oval race before. It was the Indy 500 a couple of years ago. And he was really trying to temper everybody's enthusiasm by pointing out this was not an Andretti car that he was going to be running when he ran so strong in the 500 a couple of years ago. This was a new team for McLaren trying to make their way back into IndyCar. And I think we see that he was right in trying to temper some enthusiasm. You know, he wrecked early in the week in practice, and it really took them a while to get a backup car prepared and out on track. He was slow. They take some big swings at it, can't get him up to speed on Saturday. And so he ends up, the bottom six guys in Saturday's qualifying have to run for the back row qualifying on Sunday. The top nine then race for the top nine spots and the pole. Spencer Piggott, by the way, I thought was surprisingly the fastest of the day on Saturday, but then all the Ed Carpenter racing cars were fast. Then Sunday, nerve-wracking day. There's rain delays. Most of the practices get called off because they want to focus on that last row qualifying and on the fast nine. So, racing for the last row, the last three spots, James Hinchcliffe, Fernando Alonso, Max Chilton, Patricio O'Ward, Sage Karam, and Kyle Kaiser. Karam, Hinch, and Kaiser make it into the field. I didn't think Kyle Kaiser would show up for qualifying because they wrecked on Friday and Juncos Racing did not have a backup car. I don't know all the details on if they just totally repaired it or if they borrowed parts and pieces, which I suspect they did, but quite an effort by Juncos Racing to put together a car that was able to put Kyle Kaiser in to the race. And it's a huge surprise, though, that Alonso is out of the Indy 500. Also, Max Chilton, the only full-time driver to not make the field. Patricio Award also was eliminated. But some news coming out Monday. Jenna Fryer had this story in the AP. This is fascinating stuff of what all went wrong for McLaren Autosport trying to put a car into the Indy 500. So, again, his first test was here at Texas back in April. And about a week before it, the team realized they didn't have a steering wheel. And so they began. Zach Brown, who heads up the team, had to track down a steering wheel from Cosworth to use for the test. But then the car wasn't the right color. So we heard about this here at the Speedway at the time. You know, they had that McLaren orange, as they call it, a papaya orange. And the car that they had purchased from Carlin Racing, their technical partner, and it was orange, but it wasn't the papaya orange they wanted. As a matter of fact, their marketing director had told us that it was a bit too lemony, and they considered canceling the test at Texas because of it. Then they wanted to make sure they were the ones taking the photos and they could be color-corrected so that the papaya orange would be right on the car. And that wasn't the end of the color issue. They were late getting on track here at Texas because of the steering wheel issue, among other things. It was lunchtime before they made it on track. They were supposed to be out there about 9 o'clock that morning. So that car was then sent to a paint shop 30 minutes from the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. And it was still there more than a month after McLaren had complained about the color of it. And it cost them 2 days of on-track time because they had their own built car that they took out to Indianapolis. And Alonso wrecks it in day two of practice. And so they need that Carlin car that's their backup. And it's still in the paint shop. And therefore, it wasn't ready. It wasn't ready. I tell you where the real problem was, though. Don't look at paint color as your problem here. The problem was that you paired yourself up with the wrong team, I think, to get yourself into the Indy 500. They paired them up. The car he was in on Sunday and Saturday, which was their backup car, was one they purchased from Carlin Racing. The team who had the other two drivers that didn't make the field, Award and Chilton. That's where their problem was. They were paired up with the wrong team. This is a huge black eye for McLaren Racing, one of the biggest failures many people can remember in the Indy 500 history. They had electrical issues with this car at the start of Indy practice, at the start of a test, at the Indy test last month as well. And again, they missed all of day three of practice trying to rebuild the spare car from Carlin when it finally had the right shade of orange. And then, hey, they didn't have their mistake stop there. Saturday, they had a tire puncture that screwed up their first run, and it wasn't detected because they had purchased the wrong tire sensors for the car. Sunday, he went out to practice with an entirely new setup, but they had gone through such a frenetic changeover. His team made a mistake converting inches to the metric system, and they set the car up wrong, and it scraped and sparked on his first lap, so they had to bring it in, fix it, and he got only 5 laps of practice before the practice session ended for Alonso on Sunday. And then afterwards, after qualifying was done, they discovered they had the wrong gear ratio set up. They had a car they felt was fast enough. They put the wrong gear ratio in, and they weren't fast enough. Disaster after disaster after disaster for McLaren with Fernando Alonso keeps him out. But it all started with the wrong paint color. It was a little too lemony. That wasn't it. You were with the wrong partner, I think, there. And Fernando Alonso did decline the opportunity that McLaren offered to buy a ride to put him into the Indy 500. He will not race here. Now, the question had been, will McLaren go full-time next year in IndyCar, and will Fernando Alonso do it? I didn't feel like Alonso was ready to do it anyway, just by the way he talked when he was here at the test last year and his statement that he really is comfortable living in Europe. Now, huge questions on if McLaren can really put together a competitive run next year in IndyCar. This all kind of overshadowed the Fast 9. Ed Carpenter Racing was really showing the way in the run for the pole, but it is Simon Pagenaud who winds up winning the pole. What a month of May so far. He won the Indy Grand Prix with a tremendous comeback a couple of weeks ago. Now he has the pole for the Indy 500. Those Ed Carpenter cars are really good, though. Carpenter second, Spencer Pigot third, and Ed Jones fourth. Pagano will be looking for a perfect month of May coming up in Sunday's Indy 500, and also looking for only his second oval win of his Indy car career. Is that the one at Phoenix a couple of years ago? Indy 500 starts on TV at 10 a.m. Sunday on NBC. I'll have a whole race set up on that this Thursday on No Limits Nation. Plus, we will hear from Ed Carpenter looking ahead to the Indy 500. That's all on the Thursday edition of No Limits Nation.
No Limits Nation comes to you from Texas Motor Speedway. Let's find out what's going on at TMS this week.
Well, we are just a little over 2 weeks away from the DXC Technology 600 race weekend here in Texas, and that means we're also right at 2 weeks away from the Cowtown Pit Stop Challenge presented by Speedy Cash. This is a free event for you to have the chance to see Indy cars in the streets of downtown Fort Worth. Thursday, June 6th, from 12 to 1, it's at on 2nd Street between Taylor and Burnett Streets in downtown Fort Worth, directly behind the Fort Worth Library. We're going to have four Indy cars down there. Two from Team Penske, Joseph Dugard and Simon Pagano. Two from Chip Ganassi Racing, Scott Dixon and Felix Rosenquist. And we're going to have a pit stop challenge right there on 2nd Street in downtown Fort Worth. Again, this is Thursday, June 6th at noon, right before race weekend, the start of the race weekend. It's downtown Fort Worth. This is free. Free, free, free. So make your way down there Thursday, June 6th. That's in 2 weeks and 2 days from when I'm recording this edition of No Limits Nation. Thursday, June 6th. The Cowtown Pit Stop Challenge presented by Speedy Cash, and you'll see Joseph Newgard and Simon Pagano, Scott Dixon and Felix Rosenquist driving in the streets of downtown Fort Worth and doing some pit stops as well. It's all part of our DXC Technology 600 Race Weekend. Remind you, the June Sights and Sounds 2-pack remains on sale. That's two tickets and a scanner with two headsets to the DXC Technology 600 for as low as $59. 817-215-8500 or go to TexasMotorSpeedway.com. Also, a reminder that this Saturday evening is Speedway Children's Charity's Laps for Charity here at Texas Motor Speedway. Your chance to drive your car on the mile and a half oval at Texas and help raise money for Speedway Children's Charities. Registration is now open at sctexas.org. You could pre-register and prepay or just come out here Saturday evening and pay as you come in for Laps for Charity. Again, sctexas.org for all the details on that event. This Sunday is the biggest day of auto racing in the U.S. We've got the Coke 600. We've got the Indy 500. I'll talk about the Indy race with Ed Carpenter from the IndyCar series on the Thursday show. Got a full preview of both those races coming up, too, so be sure you join me on our Thursday edition of No Limits Nation.
This has been No Limits Nation, produced and hosted by Rich Phillips, the voice of Texas Motor Speedway. Take a moment and subscribe via Apple Podcast, Spotify, Google Podcast, and more. And check out TexasMotorSpeedway.com for info and tickets to all events at your home track.